Well, hello everyone. I'm Pete Lyons. This is 300, the RC Racing Podcast. And yes, it's March. We've been away for a while, not in jail, but we are here to record another show. Please say good evening to my long-suffering co-host, also on the phone with me, Alexander Hayward. Alexander Hayward, how are you?
Pete, yeah, I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm very well, not dead.
No, we're still alive.
Not coronavirus.
COVID-19.
COVID-19. Yeah. The we'll be covering this later, listeners. But the obviously the virus sending the entire world into a tailspin. We're here. It's been a while. I've been working on some new comedy material, shall I say, for the show, but we just hadn't had a chance to get one together. But we're back now, and we'll be resuming our sort of four-weekly nonsense chats from here on in for the rest of the year. Season 2, we're on now. Season 2, 2.0. So it's great to have you on the phone, Alexander. It's been a long time. We thought we'd get back to the podcast action. So, gosh, there has been loads happening, absolutely loads, really. I'll start off. We've obviously had the fantastic Silverstone British GP at Bruntingthorpe that we were both at, which was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
It was.
It was really, really good. I'll be absolutely honest. I had a good chat with Jason Bing about this. I thought the track on the Saturday was way too difficult, in my opinion. and on the Saturday Sunday for trucks and four-wheel drive, I thought it was a lot better. Although I was only doing two-wheel drive. But by the end of it, honestly, I wanted to just throw myself off a building. It was incredibly difficult. And the combination with the very, very grippy CRC carpet, I thought it was a bit difficult. Mm. The truck and four-wheel drive layout, because Abe was racing trucks rather than two-wheel drive, was, I thought, a lot better. But as an event, I thought it was great. I thought the venue was superb. And as I mentioned to Jason Bing from the Silverstone Committee, I loved the venue. I thought it was terrific. What was your feeling on it?
I suppose to echo what you say, really. So the event was really well run. Great venue. Silverstone always do a great job of organising. There's no question as to how much effort and time they put into running their meetings, whether it be this GP, the Winter Series, or the club nights. They're all fantastic, and they've got a great group of people running the club. The track for two-wheel drive was probably the hardest track I've ever driven on.
Yeah,
I'll
go along with that.
And I think this is completely personal, the way I personally feel about it. It was too much, man. It was way too much. And the... As people may know, I'm not a big fan of the carpet either. I like the EOS. The EOS is grippy, and I like the high grip racing on the carpet, and I like the lower grip Prima Felt stuff just as much. But this CRC, I just can't, whether it's just can't get to grips with it or just can't get on with it. But for me, it doesn't make for close and exciting racing. It makes it 5 minutes of intense concentration trying not to crash, rather than throwing the car around and pushing the car into corners. And I think that combined with the jumps and all the obstacles they had on, especially on the two-wheel drive layouts, I think it was just too hard. And you can see that from a lot of people crashing every run. And the as you said, the truck layout and the four-wheel drive layout was a lot better just by removing the jump on the left-hand side and then adjusting the stairs near the rostrum. It made it a lot easier to get on with, and a lot more people could get clean runs. But for the two-wheel drive, it was just, in my opinion, I thought it was just a lot. I think it was way too much, just too complicated.
I'd echo that. And like I say, I can echo your words. And I really did want to make this clear at the time. I felt that regards the Silverstone crew, so Paul Upton, Sonia and Sean and others who were involved in putting on the event itself, I thought, was first class. I really loved it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I just felt that the track on the Saturday was over the top. I agree with you. It was the hardest indoor track I've ever raced, and it was immensely difficult. And when I think the best carpet racer in the world, quote, that wasn't me who said that. Somebody else said that.
A very good top 10 national driver from this country said this. Yeah.
So it was when you've got the best carpet racer in the world, Michael Orlowski, who can't get round clean, what hope have any of us got?
Yeah.
And you've got to remember there was everything there from kids through to world-class drivers like Michael and Lee Martin. So it, in my personal opinion, I felt it should have been something that was easier for everybody to enjoy.
Something we can actually, something that everyone can get round, at least one or two laps without crashing, and something that the quick guys can attack to try and try and make up time, and a track that everyone else can kind of, the middle kind of guys can kind of get round a nice clean 5 minutes and actually enjoy driving. I think it was just, like you said, the quick guys were crashing, the guys in the middle were crashing, and the guys at the lower end of the race meets and the kind of the guys in the lower heats, the lower end of the spectrum, they were struggling to do. You see, some of them couldn't even do four or five corners.
or four or five
obstacles without kind of rolling over. And I think it just made it. I think a few people thought it was a bit too difficult. I think is the his general kind of feeling with it.
Yes, but they remedied that for trucks and four-wheel drive on Saturday, Sunday. So, I mean, our US listeners will know CRC carpet, and I'm still very much in two minds about it. It is fantastic for tyre wear, but it's so grippy, it's quite stressful to drive on. Obviously, I think Silverstone must be the first club to get it.
I think
UK.
In this country, yeah.
Yes, so we'll see what pans out. We'll see what pans out. It really is very good for tyre wear, but it is stressful. It is stressful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the British GP was great. For our listeners who didn't go, or for any of our foreign listeners, it was at Bruntingthorpe, which is a proving ground. It was in a really big warehouse, which was heated. Plenty of pitting space. There was great things like bouncy castles inside for the youngsters and kids. It was a really great event.
Yeah.
I think if they'd just nailed the track being a bit more simple, I think it would have been absolutely 10 out of 10 without a doubt for the whole thing. But that's a bigger argument as well. And it's one that I know people know that I've had before. And is that I feel we should have racetracks and not obstacle courses, and especially for indoors. We're meant to be racing one another, especially in finals. And there seems to be a drift to indoors sometimes feeling like a bit of a performance art, where it's getting the cars around with specific kinds of sort of tricks, if you like, to handle odd obstacles, which isn't really racing cars.
No.
Certainly not in the I think the way that a lot of us might think of racing cars. I think it is an art, it is certainly a skill of itself, but I think less is more. I know that Freddie Russell, I've discussed this with him many a time, and he completely agrees with me. Less is more. And that's somewhat I see. I mean, although Dudley was a bit complicated on Sunday, you told me, but sometimes there are more along those lines, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, just a nice straightforward track. A few nice straightforward jumps that everyone can do that aren't too tricky. I think the GP, there was a couple of the jumps where we couldn't really see the up ramps or the landers, depending on where you stood in the rostrum. And I think you need to make everything clear and everything easy for people to see, and I think that's another part of the problem with that layout. But I agree, less is more. So just a nice track that you can attack with some nice, steady, flowable jumps just makes all the difference.
I think it does. I was not at all happy with my two-wheel drive performance. And that wasn't the car at all, not the wonderful lay down. It was just I couldn't get around tidy at all.
Just too hard,
And I wasn't on my own with that. And I was pole in my final. And I just knew I'm not going to win this.
Yeah.
Because I thought there is zero chance of me keeping this tidy for 5 minutes. None.
Yeah.
And I was proved right. I know we're all in the same boat, but I do. It's good to go out and battle for a final where you think it's not going to be the track that throws me, really, unless I make a mistake.
A driver error, rather than something that is out of your control almost.
So that was in January, which seems an eternity
how long it's been.
Ago.
Yes.
It has. Yeah. Well, the last one was our Christmas special, where you committed the sacrilege of saying that Sean Connery was crap in Bond, in the legacy of James Bond. And that was our Christmas special. So it's been that long. But like I say, it's 12th of March. We are back with a bang. And we'll be regular from now on, so to speak.
Yeah.
Silverstone. Where Abe came second in trucks.
Yeah.
He was absolutely thrilled to come second in trucks. It was very competitive, actually, the trucks, and as you said, to finish second on such a difficult surface and track with a truck, a stadium truck, he did a great job. Mark Anthony Jones won, and Will Johnson of Will Speed came third. You know what's coming next, don't you?
I came fourth. But I think that shows how amazing Mark Anthony Jones did, for example. I have never run a truck before. I think he turned up and ran Lee Martin's truck and TQ'd and won, which was awesome.
Yeah, very well done.
The Will Speed truck looked really good, and Abe drove amazing to get second.
Yes.
It has to be said, truck on that, well, it's a carpet again, isn't it, really? we just come back to the carpet.
It was so grippy. Yeah. He's certainly taken to it, because without this being a, bang the drum for Abe, he's literally at the recent Silverstone Winter Series, which has just run throughout the winter. He just won trucks then. He was very pleased with that as well. So he certainly took to it on that surface. Although I know for himself, he doesn't really quite enjoy the surface either, but seems to have done quite well on it.
I think the kids seem to generally pick it up a little bit better than the adults, don't they?
I think possibly the reactions is an issue. Because the carpet's so reactive, maybe the kids' reactions suit it. I think that's certainly a potential factor. You yourself, of course, have had some good results at Dudley Worlds, haven't you?
The Dudley Worlds. Winter Series just finished this last weekend. The series finished in third.
Yes.
So I was pleased with that. I really enjoyed Dudley. They'd always put on, again, a great meeting. It's always well run. I really liked the Prima Fowl carpet, having a bit more give to it, a bit of slide to it. So it feels like you can push the car harder. If you feel like you need to pick up some time to try and beat someone, you can actually push the car. The car's moving around on the surface a little bit, and it makes for some really good racing. The tracks are generally quite small in the hall that they have there. We have 10 car heats and 10 car finals, but we're doing 16 second laps. But it doesn't feel like you're ever on top of someone else. It always feels like you've got plenty of space between you and the next guy. And it's a lot easier to drive in a bunch if you do get kind of caught up with a few other drivers. But I think because it's a lot more forgiving, the surface. It just feels like if someone's behind you, you just know you're not going to get nailed off the track. Or likely, if someone's in front of you, then you're not just going to have a different braking point to them and nail them off the track. So I do really enjoy the Dudley Win Series. That's my third year. I think I've come fourth twice in the series, or maybe a fifth and a fourth, and now I've got third this year. So I'm pleased with that.
Progression,
absolutely. Ben Pugh dominated the series.
Yes, he did.
Took five TQs and five wins, and I think he probably TQ'd the majority of the rounds, round by round system. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't TQ, say, only four rounds across the entire series. So he showed complete domination of the series, which was good to see.
That was awesome for Ben, who he also won the Silverstone Winter Series in four wheel drive, I think.
He did, and I think he narrowly missed out on a podium in two-wheel drive. I think he was fourth in two-wheel drive.
Was he fourth? Right, well, that was obviously with the L1. And well done to Tommy Hall, who won the two-wheel drive series.
Yeah, absolutely,
Closely followed by Jamie, obviously the two of them. Tommy and Jamie, or Tamey, as we've celebrity named them in the past.
Or Johnny.
Johnny
Hall.
So the lovely Halls doing superbly at Winter Silverstone Winter Series as well. So I mean, so much to talk about, Euros and Nationals, but we can't really also get away from the coronavirus, which I've got to be honest, is I'm bored to tears of it already. Now, can I just say at the outset, I really don't want to, at any point, anyone get upset thinking I'm making light of it or that I don't take it seriously with regards to the risks to others. And that was very Brent, that, wasn't it? We're saving others with his redundancy. it's not great, but I'll be perfectly honest, I'm sure there may well be others out there who agree with me, the non-stop hysteria from Sky News, GMTV and BBC News has been absolutely doing my head in. Now, it doesn't mean you stick your head in the sand, but I mean, you live in Coventry, okay?
Yeah.
So you have Coventry Live, you know, the dregs of the Facebook news community. I am, we have Cambridgeshire Live. That's just as bad. Absolute garbage.
Finding things to write about, desperation to get a news story.
It was a bit like Ricky Gervais's comedy, the one he's recently done, where he works in a local news office. And it's this scratching around for things to talk about. Cambridgeshire Live had, they had one headline, and it seems to be non-stop clickbait. And it's, coronavirus victim in neighbouring county. Now, I live in Cambridgeshire, where people can look that up on the map. Nothing ever happens here. But I live in Cambridgeshire. And the neighbouring county, in inverted commas, was Devon, right?
Yeah.
That's not a neighbouring county. Yeah. That's a bit like saying that you live in Glasgow. And you know what? Mm. Somebody got ill in the neighbouring town. Where was that town? Oh, yeah, Portsmouth. You know, quite a way away. And you just, how can you even write that? And it's because they've got nothing to write about. You've had Piers Morgan, and what annoys me is they'll get somebody on. I saw this week. They get somebody on and they say, should we not be cancelling all events? And they had on, it was a government advisor, a scientist, who was saying, well, actually, no. We've not reached that stage yet. And also, if we concentrate people with coronavirus into smaller areas, like, for example, sitting in pubs together, there's a higher likelihood of transmission of the virus than there is in a big area. Okay? So they sort of stared at him and asked him a few more questions. Then they had another guest on, and then they asked him the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's like they're fishing for anybody who will feed their hysteria. Should we not be banning big events, Dr. Hillary? Should we not be banning big events, you know, stylist who puts clothes on somebody? It's trying to ask anybody and everybody till they can get something to hook some hysteria on. And I found it really annoying. And it's just non-stop. So we've all seen figures where there are thousands of people, I believe it was, correct me if I'm wrong and I apologize if I am, die daily from malaria, which is perfectly preventable. Okay. Yeah. We've got 590 people at the latest count that I saw of people in the UK with coronavirus, out of 67 million,
yeah,
10 have died.
So far.
Now, so far, I'm not making light of it, but the rationality seems to have gone out the window. There's, I mean, that doesn't cause clicks or sell newspapers, does it, being rational? But
no.
People can't buy toilet roll. I mean, the toilet roll frenzy of 2020. What's that, I mean, all about?
Didn't you check in on Facebook earlier? Pete Lyons is at Tesco buying toilet roll.
Yeah, I'm actually surrounded
fitting
by
your
it.
Citroen Picasso full to the brim of toilet roll and dried pasta.
Yeah. Hypocrisy.
Ready for a lockdown.
That's racist.
Ready for your 7-day lockdown. Yeah, the toilet paper thing. I mean, come on. How much toilet paper do you get through in the 7 days that you're supposed to be self-isolated?
It doesn't
anyway?
It doesn't.
Are you
going to
go through
diarrhea?
32 rolls, 2 16 packs of Charmin in a week?
Charmin, you're out of market.
How much curry are you going to eat?
It doesn't. Oh, 4-ply.
Comfort.
Comfort. No chafing, please.
Yeah, that is 4-ply.
It doesn't cause diarrhea. Yeah, right. It doesn't cause diarrhea. So why the loo roll frenzy? I mean, Andrex must be laughing all the way to the bank.
I know,
really,
yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, people are going to be on one sheet before long, aren't they, if they can't get any. I don't understand it. Of course, though, with this sort of, you know, being sensible, this could well have an impact on our Euros and Nationals, which I genuinely obviously hope it doesn't. Myself and Abe are in for 2- and 4-wheel drive at the Euros and for 2- and 4-wheel drive at the Nationals, as are you.
Yes.
I would hope that it doesn't affect it. But we were discussing this earlier. If the national season and the Euros becomes interrupted, would do the F gradings carry over for next year? I can't see any other way that they couldn't. I mean, obviously, this probably is in the manual.
Yeah, it depends on whether they, we mentioned when we spoke earlier, whether they cancel one round, the first one, if anything, or whether they cancel the first two or three or whatever. I'm sure it would get to a point where if they do have to cancel these events for whatever reason, which I'm hopeful they won't, obviously, but I don't think they will either. But if it does get to the point where they have to cancel these events, then, like you say, we can't actually run the series to complete enough rounds to complete a series. Will the license grades get carried over? And as we've mentioned before, I will legitimately hold my F1 license for 2 consecutive years.
Legitimately.
As will you with your F2Ns. Legitimate,
yes.
F2N, double
legitimate.
F2N.
Yeah. Yeah. Abe and myself. Legitimate. Genuine F2N.
Genuine F2N, yes. 2020.
Yeah. It's a good point. I dare say Paul Worsley or Keith Ward will probably know. But I'm sure they've probably already thought of it. But it is.
Yeah.
I am hoping, and I have a feeling that I think it will die down. They could be famous last words. Let's hope not literally. Last words, you know, this may be the last show ever because I'm actually dead next month.
Death from toilet roll.
But Andrex. Death by Andrex.
You've got no food, but you've got plenty of toilet roll.
Yeah, I had nothing to eat, but hey, I've got loo roll. I think that things will die down. That's certainly what I'm hoping. But of course, that being said, wherever there's a crisis, there is rank profiteering, which leads me to a news story that I saw this week that really made me chuckle. A very industrious youngster was caught, as the news article put it, caught selling hand wash for 50 pence to his school friends.
Yeah.
Right, and he made £9 out of
fair
it.
Play.
And
yeah.
I know, fair play, industrious. I love the actual last line of the news article was that he's expressed intention after being reprimanded by, I believe, the school and his parents was that he intended to spend his profits on buying a kebab, which I thought was just an absolutely fantastic real level of reality
to his
industry. So I've made £9. Where am I going? Let's go to Kebabylon for a slap up feast, which I thought was very industrious. But there's been loads of that going on. Somebody was raging earlier on Twitter at some corner shop up in Scotland selling 50 milliliters, I think, little spray pumps of alcohol wash for $19.99.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's outrageous. That.
And the whole kind of panic buying thing, you can understand people buying hand wash and antibacterial sprays, or whatever, or hand gels. But when it, as we've already touched on, really, the kind of toilet bowl thing and the food thing, if everyone was just to behave normally and buy one of these antibacterial things to last them a week or so, then go and get another one when they run out of that one, or buy a couple, then it's never going to be a problem. There's not going to be a shortage. But the fact that people go absolutely mad then creates this shortage of every kind of ridiculous product we have on our shelves. And causes then people to profiteer from selling probably a £1 hand gel for $19.99.
Well, this is the thing. It's like what you've just basically said is just behave normally.
Yeah, just act normally, and we're not going to run out of this stuff. Yeah, people are going to have this. This is a question for you before we crack on. Is coronavirus a disease or a virus? Because
it's
Boris Johnson's consistently on the news saying we need to stop the spread of this disease. He's making it sound as though like we're all going to get it and we're all going to die like the plague.
I didn't think it was
a disease.
This came up earlier, and that is that somebody was. I'm not a doctor, by the way. as in, I'm not a medical doctor, nor am I from Gallifrey. And ride around the universe writing wrongs in a police box, London style. Somebody said it's not a disease. Not a disease. It's a virus.
It's a virus. You catch it like a cold or like a flu or something similar. Yeah.
The thing is that another thing about this is that there will be an enormous percentage of people who will catch it and barely know they've had it.
Yeah.
So
mild symptoms.
Exactly. It will be mild. We're not talking, Ebola here. It is very communicable, I believe is the right word. And it does have serious side effects for people of certain ages. It's not great. And underlying health conditions. But it just seems to have really not been helped by the media frenzy, I think, is what I'm saying, where, Cheltenham's still gone ahead this week. Some people feel that's mystifying. It's not really mystifying when I believe that it's worth £65 million to the local economy. That's where it stopped being mystifying in my book.
Put it on.
Yeah, that's why it actually happened. But I can say, obviously, as soon as it started to pick up, I thought about this because I thought James Helliwell and his team will put on an amazing Euros. And I really hope that this dies down for their sakes as much as any of the competitors for the fantastic event that I think will happen and that I, myself and Abe, are so much looking forward to being part of, as are you and others. So I do hope that it all dies down. And I guess I feel a bit salty towards the media who seem to be whipping it up somewhat where... Yeah. It feels like we're in some sort of zombie apocalypse movie where you're going to walk out onto streets and people are going to be, riding around in, Nissan trucks with AK-47s on the lookout for, tinned food. So I think that makes me feel a bit annoyed, really. So moving on from the coronavirus, there's been a flurry of new cars released since our last podcast. Introduction being we now have a stock version of the Kuga laydown from Schumacher yep. with more carbon parts for a lighter car. We also have the L1 Evo, which is the evolved four-wheel drive from the
Evolution.
L1. Evolution. Fantastic four-wheel drive platform. My opinion, the best one out there. I can't wait to build mine because it actually came the other day. So yeah, I've got mine ready for the regionals and nationals and the Euros. The B6.2 is out.
Absolutely.
Would you have? Yep. Perhaps you might like to expand upon that somewhat.
Yeah, I've been using the 6.2 since it came out, since the release. It's just really, I mean, it's very similar to the old car in regards to appearance. Not a lot has changed as such, but they seem to have just kind of tweaked things to the point where it's just giving it more of everything, if that makes sense. So I've had a chance to use it indoors a little bit. I've had a chance to use it outdoors at Kidderminster and test days. And for me, outdoors at Kidderminster, Winter Series of the Week was just fantastic. I got a bit unlucky with the rain in one of the rounds, which unfortunately bumped me out of the A final. But the car just felt really good. And it just has more steering. The back end just kind of rotates around the corner a little bit. I think with the 6.1, that's where a couple of people who had the car, that's what they felt like the car perhaps lacked a little bit. As we know, cars are always personal preference. Any car's personal preference, really. But I think a few of the B6.1 drivers felt like it didn't quite rotate around the corners as quickly as some of the other cars. But with the changes they've made, new wishbones, new drive shaft hubs and chassis, the combination of everything they've done, although very subtle, seems to have really improved the car. And it's for me, like outdoors now, it's just mega. It's just really, really good. An improvement on a car that was already fantastic. So, yeah,
I think it's great. So, obviously, you know, the B6.2 and the laydown are two amazing cars. And I think it's my personal feeling, as you know, is I try not to get too partisan about things, but being a Schumacher driver, as is Abe, but I obviously want the UK 1/10 scene to be successful. So it's great that there's those cars out there. And there's actually been another car announced, which has been a somewhat long awaited, I'd say, really. And that is that there's a new S-Works two-wheel drive due. I think it will probably be around March, April time, sort of late March, April time that will be coming through. So absolutely great that there's an S-Works two-wheel drive to come along with the four-wheel drive. So hopefully we'll be seeing that at regionals and nationals. And it's another team that I think will be great, that there'll be another team out there. It's all good for the 1/10 scene in the UK. So I wish S-Works, Alec and the team down there to really, really good luck with that, and that they'll be able to make their mark on the UK regional and national scene. So that's really, really good. And talking about regions, I was actually down at Coastal Model Car Club about 3 weeks ago. It was my first venture outdoors with Abe this winter season, and it had been our first race meeting at Coastal ever. So we were quite pleased to qualify mid-pack, sort of. There was an A final and a B final. So we're up in the A final and doing really well. And Abe was really, really doing so well. He did get batted off twice, which he was a bit upset about. But hey ho. But what I can say was it was a great, fun little track. Never been there before, really enjoyed it. It's Jody Howard's home and Steve Biscoe, I think. And the chap called George Fairweather is involved in running it, and he made us feel so welcome. Massive thumbs up to George for how they treated us, because sometimes you go to some clubs, don't you, Alexander? And, well, sometimes, I'm not saying we're all that, or you act like, you know, some sort of king and expect to be brought in on some sort of throne or anything like that. It's not that at all, but it's like some places they'll dump you in the bottom heap.
Yeah, just because you've never been there
before. Even if they know that you're like a national standard driver. And it's like, we seem to have these idiotic mentalities in RC where you can go places and unless you're particularly recognizable, mentioning no names, a certain driver that I know of was in the bottom heat of four-wheel drive at an event you were at recently for no rhyme nor reason. Yeah. Okay. Why? You know, we work all year for these F gradings, use them. And yeah. George didn't do that with us. He put me and Abe straight in the top heat of two-wheel drive. Where we definitely don't belong. No, it's our natural. We were straight in there and we held our own. And yeah. even though we'd not been there before, and a bit, it's nice to be treated that way. As I think George would probably treat anybody who he would give them the appropriate grading for wherever they should be. But that doesn't seem to happen.
Yeah, I think as long as people are realistic on their ability. So, I mean, first time I ever went to MB Models, for example, they said to me, it was a couple of years ago, and they said, okay, so ability, this is one of their, I think it's just a club round, actually, just a club meeting they had. And they said to me, okay, so what's your ability? As I booked in, I said, well, what's the scale you're using? And they weren't using the F scale. They were using just like 1 to 15. And I said, 12, 13. Thinking that if we had a national round with 12 or 13, sorry, with 15 heats, for example, I would probably be in roughly heat 11, 12, 13, that kind of area. Mm. It's always difficult to give yourself a rating, isn't it, really? But then they asked me just roughly what region I race in, what kind of finals I made, and they made their decision on my ability based on that. So it's just kind of understanding what you do and where you race and trying to get like a sense of your level rather than just take your word for it and you give them a number out of thin air kind of thing. But I think that just leads back to what we said in previous podcasts about how we race at the nationals or regionals all year to obtain an F grading, whether it be F5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Why can't we use that at these kind of meetings? Why can't they just use an F grading system?
Yes. Because if you're an F2N, it's highly likely you're probably quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're an F1, you've got to be good.
Yeah.
You know.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The thing is I've been to MB a couple of times with you. And yeah. I really like it up there. I think they're a nice bunch. But I'm really honest about skill levels.
Yeah.
And I put it this way. The last time I was up there, I didn't think it went all too well, if you remember.
Yeah.
Because... I'm not bad at indoor racing and outdoors, but you know, all that happens is you end up hitting people in the air where I'm doing a double or something like that, and they're not, and it ends up not only ruining your day but theirs as well. But I don't like moaning. You never want to be the one who goes and moans, do you? Certainly, that's not me. It's not me to go over and say what am I doing in this heat, da 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 da. And I think. Common sense would prevail. Sadly, it doesn't always seem to, and it's a bit of a shame. But as I say, George was great, and that's our first time at Coastal because we're going to be racing in the East of England this year in the regional series, which has been going from strength to strength. No more Midwest for us, certainly not this year. We're going to try the East of England because it is my natural home because that's where I actually live.
Yeah.
But myself and Abe have been commuting. Well, I commute, he sleeps.
Abe sleeps, yeah.
Abe sleeps, yeah. Or we stay in a certain house in Coventry, it has been known. We race in the Midwest. So I wanted to say thank you, really, to Tony Bishop and the whole Midwest team for having us for three seasons now.
Yeah,
and what a fantastic region it is. I think it's the most difficult, without a doubt. And we'll miss all of our friends, but it's like 3 hours for me to get some of the tracks for a regional track.
Yeah.
So all of the East of England tracks are like no more than about an hour away. So it made sense, really, especially since they've moved it to being on separate days. That they did used to have 2 and 4 wheel drive on one day, and they limited it to 60 entries, and me and Abe could never get here. But also, I couldn't run 2 and 4 wheel drive in one day for me and Abe.
No,
I just couldn't.
It's just too hard, isn't it? Yeah, it's difficult to switch between the two as well. Actually, from a driver's point of view, it's actually hard to switch between two and four wheel drive. So to have individual rounds, it's nice.
I think that's great that it's changed to two separate days. So hopefully that won't also be interrupted by a disease, as Bojo is calling it. And you are in Midwest yet again, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. Always Midwest. Been Midwest since 1999. So I'm entering my 21st year of Midwest regionals.
21st year of Midwest.
I did have 6 years off in the middle, but my 21st year of being in this region.
That's a bit Trigger's new broom, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Isn't it?
21
I've
years,
been in this region
6 years
for 21
off.
Years, apart from six of them. So
six in the middle.
It's only 15.
So
I've had my broom for, most people will know Trigger's broom, obviously, from the legendary Only Fools and Horses, where he said he'd said had the same broom for 20 years or something, but he'd changed the handle and changed the brush. That was a bit Trigger's new broom there, Alexander. It really was. Here's, I've got a little anecdote for you. I think you'll like this one. Right. So all the listeners will know my name is not Michael Caine. My name is Pete Lyons, okay? P-E-T-E, Pete Lyons. Okay, so my good lady goes to the pharmacy the other day. This is absolutely true, right? goes to the pharmacy the other day, and she had a prescription to pick up for me.
Yeah.
And she hands over the prescription and documentation, and the pharmacist looks at it and says, "This is wrong." And my wife said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, the names don't match, right?" And she said, "Well, what do you mean? It's my husband." And the pharmacist said, "Well, look." And on the prescription, my name, right, had been written as Pele Lyons. Yeah. As in legendary promoter of men's intimate assistance products. And footballer Pele from Brazil. Now you could see that it was clear that typical doctor's type writing, they hadn't crossed the T.
Oh, no.
Okay. So it was Pele Lyon. And my wife said, "Well, it's obviously my husband Pete.
Yeah.
This is our home address. Everything else is correct." Looks at it. "Yeah, but it says Pele." And my wife said, "Well, look, this is my husband's information. He said, look, here's his NHS info. It's Pete. It's clear. It's a mistake, right?
Yeah.
Pele." I said, "No, it's Pele. I can't do the prescription."
Oh, right. Man. Yeah.
Okay. So my wife had to leave in a huff. Right. Had to go back and get. They crossed the L with a T to make it into a T.
Yeah.
And then stamped a business card for the practice with the details. I said, "Look, if they give you any trouble, get them to call reception." And she went back and they fulfilled it, right?
Yeah.
But do you know what I think would have been absolutely brilliant is that, you know, my wife had said to them, "Well, look, I should know my husband's name. I've been married to him for 14 years. Right, yeah. I should have gone in there to collect the prescription, shouldn't I?" And said, "Oh, you've got a prescription for me." Yeah, it says, "Yeah, what's the name?" I should have said Pele Lyons, because I think it'd been, "What? Who? What did you say your name was?" Yeah, my name's Pele Lyons. Couldn't do the prescription for me yesterday.
The thing is, Pele Lyons actually sounds like it could be Pele's junior football team that he supports in Brazil.
This is it, Pele Lyons.
The Pele Lyons
symbol. and the pharmacist would have been like, "Well, I don't understand. Well, your name's Pete. Your wife said it, your name's Pete." I said, "I don't know what she's talking about.
Yeah,
my name's
don't
Pele.
Listen to her. Bloody I am Pele."
My name's Pele. 46 years I've been on this earth. I should know my own name. Yeah, but it says Pete here on the prescription. Well, that's wrong. I have absolutely sent them into a tailspin, I think. That would have. So that's a little anecdote. Up, yeah. That's a little anecdote for you that that made me laugh this week. And another thing that I wanted to cover is a TV program that really gets on my wick. Now, you're probably going to say you've never seen it, but many of our listeners may have. Yeah. Saturday Kitchen. Do you know
Never seen it. Never seen it. Is it in the, on in the mornings?
Yes.
Like a morning show. I know of it, and I have seen clips from it, I think. And,
well, guess what day it's on?
Wednesday?
Saturday. A Saturday Kitchen. It has the most annoying theme. It is so pretentious. It absolutely drives me into a rage whenever it's on, right? The premise is you have three farty celebrities on there, okay? And they cook these dishes that would basically be made from your entire month's wages on three items from Waitrose, okay? And that none of the dishes they ever cook, right, are anything that normal people would eat, ever.
This is the kind of trend with general cooking programs, though, isn't it? So it's like, oh, just simply do this, this, and this, and go to the cupboard and buy and pick out your ingredients that no one ever has in their cupboard, and you can only buy from a market trader in deepest Camden, in the middle of London. It's just I understand how these programs work. But continue.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. The average radar control car racer who's not married, their cupboard probably has red kidney beans at the back, doesn't it? some crushed pineapple and some mushy peas. That's usually it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's proper student. I bet you, being a university alumni, right, if that's the right word, what was in your cupboard?
What is in my cupboard? What was in my cupboard?
What was in your cupboard? Not now, because you're quite responsible. What was in your cupboard at university? Other than black hair dye.
With the fear of offending some people who like to enjoy this kind of food, super noodles was a popular one. Sausages. My speciality in first year was four sausages, tomato sauce and cheese. Sandwich
of bread
and one sandwich, so like two pieces of bread, four sausages with cheese on it, grated cheese, red Leicester, and tomato sauce in two pieces of bread. That was my that's my first year meal. And then quite often in this, not often actually, but on occasion, I would shop at either Heron or Farm Foods. And I would rather enjoy a
farm food.
I would enjoy a bird's eye roast meal in a tray.
Oh my word! Do you remember them?
Those really pieces of cheap, kind of like pumped up full of water turkey, and you get like your little carrots, you get your potatoes and your peas, and gravy. A bit of gravy on the side. And they actually, in fairness to bird's eye, they actually taste pretty good. But they're actually not like inedible. They actually taste fine, I would sometimes have them.
I've got to concur with you on that. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's the like the bird's eye meal for one. You've
Pierce
got like literally a handful of Pierce film, a handful of baby carrots, isn't it? Then usually there's a little bit of broad beans or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then some generous cuts, like you say, of turkey, right?
Yeah.
I know exactly those things. I haven't seen them in ages. But this is stock student food, really, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
You might get the odd sophisticated one who eats quinoa or something. But usually it's a bird's eye heatable meal, super noodles, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's that program absolutely. It's interesting you should say that, because that program absolutely drives me mad. The Saturday Kitchen. is so pretentious. I hate the dishes. Yeah. I hate the presenters. I hate the guests. I hate what they cook. Basically, I hate the whole damn thing. So it's every time it comes on, I think to myself, could this show get any further up its own bum? And the answer is no. You know, it is so pretentious, it does my head in. So that's been on the agenda for me this week to talk about. And this leads us nicely, segues into our quiz for this week.
Okay.
Yes. So we have a quiz for you. The quizzes have proven to be extremely popular. And I like to pick something that's usually fairly tough, but fun to do.
Yeah.
And topical. Educating entertainment, as I like to say, edutainment with the quizzes. Honestly, Alexander, the amount of people that come up to me and speak to me about the podcast and the quiz is a real hit. I promise you, the quiz is a real hit. It really doesn't actually matter whether you get them right or wrong because people are trying to guess along whilst they listen. Yeah. So today's quiz is topical and it's about the most devastating epidemic to ever strike Europe, which is the bubonic plague, just to lift everybody's spirits.
Oh, lovely. Right? Yes.
So we have 10 questions, listeners, about the Black Death, just to really sort of put everything in perspective. So we'll give the answers out as we always do at the end. I have done the quiz and I got 6 correct. Okay.
Yeah.
Not bad. Higher than the average, apparently, on this.
Multiple choice.
So it is. Yeah, yes.
Okay.
And this might take you back to those school days when you learned about things in history at primary school. It's multiple choice and I think you'll probably find it quite interesting. So question number one, Quizmaster. What was the main period that the Black Death affected Europe? Was it 1394 to 1406, 1296 to 1306, 1347 to 1351, or 1372 to 1379?
72 to 79, the last one.
Okay.
These are all guesses, by the way. Educated, obviously.
Oh, you can work some of it out. Okay. What were the symptoms of the Black Death? Fever, headaches and vomiting. Black swellings the size of eggs on the armpits or groin.
Yeah.
Dark spots on the skin.
Yeah.
All of them.
We have to throw that curveball in at the end. Because I was going to say it was the second one, the under the armpits, the black boils.
Yeah.
Because I remember hearing stories at, in secondary school, actually. We had a really good history teacher, Mr. Pownall, who used to wear a wig.
See? Syrup.
But he used to, you know, those kind of teachers that make the lessons come alive, as yes. corny as it sounds. And he used to make it really interesting and exciting. And I remember him kind of going on and performing the actions of cutting the boil from under the armpit open and letting all the fluid seep out.
Ouch. Ooh.
So I'll go for that one, but it could be all of the above, maybe.
Well, which one are you going to go for?
We'll go for boils.
Okay. Black swellings the size of eggs on the armpits or groin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's, I have to say, it is great when a teacher makes things come alive.
Yeah.
I had several like that. I also sadly had some who killed it. My woodwork teacher was a horror and an awful man who crushed the life out of anything practical like that, that I generally like.
Yeah.
Absolutely crushed the life out of it. And I couldn't get away from his classes soon enough. So question number 3. Once a person was infected, how long did they generally last before succumbing to the plague? 24 hours, 3 to 5 days, 7 to 8 days, or 10 to 12 days?
What's the middle one again?
Do you want the options again?
All the same.
24 hours, 3 to 5 days, right. 7 to 8 days, or 10 to 12 days?
I'll go 10 to 12, dragged out.
Okay. How did the plague enter Europe? That's question 4. From tainted food, by flea-bearing rats on ships from poisoned water from slaves.
Yes. Flea-bearing rats on ships. I believe they hid in the carpets that they were bringing back. They discovered carpet. Like rugs and things from the from India. And, they discovered Eos carpet and they brought some back to do some racing on. But yeah, and they brought back some carpets from like, the Far East, I believe. And they had, they basically rats were living in the carpet. And yeah, that's what did it. Yeah. So again, Mr. Pownell, if he's wrong, if I'm wrong with his answers, I'm going to have to tell him somehow and say,
Mr. Pownell,
crap.
Blame.
Yeah, Mr. Pownell.
Where there's blame, there's a claim. You could ruin a poor teacher's life by going for compensation.
wrong. What you told me was wrong.
On the 300, the RC Racing Podcast, hashtag.
Okay.
Five. How did the European population become infected by the plague? Being in the same room with someone already infected, being bitten by infected fleas, by touching anything worn by people who were infected with the plague, or any of those options?
I'm going to go with the fleas, stick on that theme. Okay. It could be anything, but I'll go with the fleas.
Okay, this is a great one, this is. Question number six. How did Pope Clement the VI assist in combating the plague? There's a name you don't hear too often, isn't it? Clement.
Clement Boda. Yeah.
Clement. Yeah, Clement Boda. Clement Freud. Not too often you hear that one. So, met with rulers of all European countries to let them repent of their sins. Ordered the death of all Jews within city limits. Consecrated the River Rhone at Avignon to be used as a burial site. Or he fasted for 30 days.
Burial site, I reckon, as a guess.
Okay. Consecrated the Rhone River at Avignon. Okay? Avignon. Got a bit hello there. Question number seven. Which of the following medieval practices increased the chances of becoming infected with the plague? Getting drunk on a daily basis, burning the dead, killing all the dogs that could be found, mass burial sites.
Burial sites.
Okay.
Actually, no, the dogs. I'm going to get dogs. Killing the dogs.
Okay, yeah. Question number eight. Which occupation had a large growth rate at this time due to the plague? Carpenters, tailors, priests, or lawyers?
Carpenters.
Okay. Question number nine. How many people are estimated to have died from the plague in Europe? 5 million, 50 million, 17 million, or 33 million?
We'll go big, 33 million.
Okay. And the last question. In popular culture, which children's rhyme is said to be about the plague?
Ring-a-ring-a-roses. There we go.
Yeah. But okay. Yeah, I won't bother really. Yeah, we'll black sheep. Yeah. London Bridge is falling down through your mouth. Ring-a-ring-a-roses. Okay. Submit my answers. Okay.
What are you saying?
You got 4 out of 10.
Weak.
I got 6. But then I am hive of I wasn't gonna say that. I'm a hive of useless facts. So it doesn't surprise me. So here we go. I mean, some of these actually, for the educational angle of the show, are really quite astonishing. And for our sort of foreign listeners and American listeners, this affected Europe. It really is quite astonishing, this. And it does put the toilet virus, the bog roll virus, into perspective.
Yeah.
You answered, when did it affect Europe? 1372 to 1379, you said. The correct answer was actually 1347 to 1351.
Oh, okay. Not many miles out. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so it says, however, there is evidence of the plague affecting areas of China dozens of years before, which would tie in with maybe with your carpet story of them bringing in EOS carpet into RC tracks.
Yeah.
Seems like China's good for a few plagues, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
The bubonic plague reappeared sporadically in Europe at various times until well into the 18th century. Okay. Mm. What were the symptoms of the Black Death? You said about the boils. You are right in that, but it's actually all of them.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It was all of the above symptoms.
Yeah.
And in some cases, blood became poison and gushes of blood came from the nose. How horrific is that?
Yeah.
Awful.
What a way to die.
I know. Once a person was infected, how long do they generally last before succumbing to the plague? You said 10 to 12 days. The actual correct answer is 3 to 5.
Oh, okay. Yeah, quick death.
I mean, that is, can you think of that? 3 to 5 days. Yeah, I'm fine. No, I'm dead. You know.
Yeah.
Some people did contract it and survive, although that was rare. Usually after they had been infected, lasted 5 days at the maximum. Sobering thought.
Easy come, easy go.
How did the plague enter Europe? Correct. Flea bearing rats on ships.
Yeah.
Okay. In October 1347, mariners who had visited areas of India and China brought the plague back when they docked in Messina in Sicily. The occupants of the boats were already very ill or dying when they made contact with the citizens. They realized too late that the ships in the port had brought it in, but the plague had spread.
Yeah.
How did the European population become infected by the plague was question number 5. And you said bitten by infected fleas. The answer was any of those answers.
Okay. Yeah.
So the sad part, you could catch it by caring for someone who was sick, handling their remains, or even moving into an empty quarters if someone had had it. I mean, that's quite sad, really. And talk about contagious. That's absolutely terrible. So how did Pope Clement assist in combating the plague was question 6. And you said he consecrated the River Rhone at Avignon to be used as a burial site. And that was correct.
Mm.
I thought that's a bit of one
of those things where, well, I'm guessing from the answer is basically he chucked a load of people into the river that had it and dead. Did he?
Well, they did, because apparently they couldn't keep up with the burial sites, couldn't keep up with the deaths.
And that's a kind of more ordinary thing they would have done, which then the infected water would have travelled further downstream and then drank by the healthy people in the neighbouring towns.
Yes.
you can just imagine it, can't you?
Horrific, isn't it? And you actually got the next question right as well, which was about what medieval practice increased the chances of becoming infected with the plague. And you said killing all the dogs. And that was absolutely right.
I thought the fleas would have nowhere to live.
What actually happened was killing dogs took away the main predator of the rats, one of the main predators who spread it.
Yeah.
Mass burial sites, burning the dead, and getting blind drunk were all practiced in an effort to stop the spread of the plague. So we can see clearly that most people who go to Oopal are clearly worried about getting bubonic plague.
Yeah.
So
Wetherspoons is the best cure for plague. We should all go to Wetherspoons.
Yeah, you're never gonna get the plague if you go to Oopal, hang around with Craig Gibson, or go to a Wetherspoons. So there you go. Which occupation? This is so typical, honestly. Which occupation had a large growth rate at the time due to the plague was question number 8. You said carpenters. The correct answer was lawyers.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Those bloodsuckers always increase, right? Yeah. With all the money, goods and property left behind, lawyers and judges had to figure out who had rights of ownership. Sadly, many doctors and priests became infected by helping and treating those, and their numbers diminished. So obviously, a good environment for our ambulance chasing injury lawyers for you types. So question number 9, how many million people are estimated to have died from the plague in Europe? You were close. You said 33. The answer was 50 million. 50 million.
You obviously said 15.
50 million is the answer. One third of Europe's population. One third. Some sources do give higher figures, but it seems to be a preferred estimate. It's about 50 is about right. 50 million people.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's just ridiculous, yeah.
It is when you compare it to, as I said, notwithstanding our comments earlier about taking this seriously, 50 million compared to Cambridgeshire Live going hysterical along with Piers Morgan about 590 people. I know that it's early days. Yeah. I know that it's early days, but honestly, is quite astonishing, really.
Yeah.
And you were quite correct with the last one. In popular culture, children's rhyme Ring a Ring of Roses is said to be about the plague. Because of the rashes and the boils on the skin, they go in a ring.
Yeah.
And
they used to have a pocket full of posies to smell as they were walking down these streets, which stunk of the dead.
Yes.
And they used to put their nose in these have little bags full of petals of flowers to smell when they walk past these horrible scenes.
I do believe that I think people also felt that it protected them.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
From the plague, which was clearly not correct, given the amount of people who died from it. So, well done. That wasn't easy.
Yeah.
So, we hope that the listeners have also enjoyed the topical bubonic plague quiz, which leads us on to race meeting. So, this weekend, I will be racing at Patworth on Friday. Very friendly local small little club that has just invested in new Tudor Heart Racing jumps. Actually, I was actually helping build them yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's the Buggy Knights there have really taken off. It's absolutely brilliant, actually, because there's a whole heap of kids. So my littlest, David, is racing there now as well. He's only just turned 7. There's another little lad called Joseph and others. And it's just brilliant seeing a whole heap of kids who are barely 8, 9 years old. And it just really bodes well for 10th RC in the future. And Patworth is getting more and more popular. So they've invested in jumps. It's absolutely fantastic. And then we have the finale of the fantastic Worksop Schumacher Masters on Sunday. I can't wait to get down to that. Abe will be racing a four-wheel drive and truck. And it's the last round. So...
Yeah.
Very much looking forward to that. It's been a superb series, I can't wait to get up to that, and hopefully that we'll be able to do that and that will be okay. Muzzy has already said that on a Facebook post at Worksop that the event is on, but we must all be sensible. Okay.
Yeah.
So where are you off to this weekend?
This weekend it will be Telford on Sunday for the last of the MAM events.
Yeah.
Of this year. Back outdoors to Telford. And that's it for this weekend, actually. And then the weekend after, we have the finale of the DMS Winter Series, DMS Racing, based in Watford. They have new Primafelt carpet, actually. They race on Primafelt anyway. But their carpet is, I'm led to believe, quite old, multiples of years old. And they've now just purchased West Bridgford's Primafelt carpet. So the same carpet, but which is a lot newer, around 4 years old. So it's one of my favourite surfaces to race on indoors. And I'll be there next Saturday for the finale of that, between me and Kev Hunt, as to who gets second overall. First place is sadly out of both of our reaches after the last round. But we're almost tied on points, I believe, going into this final round. So it's between me and Kev Hunt as to who wins.
Comes second in the series. Lewis, by any chance?
Mark Lewis, yeah. He's had... three consistent rounds and another good round to back it up. So he's just clinched it just enough to take the overall victory in the series.
Good luck to you and Kev then.
Yeah, it should be some good racing. Yeah.
May the best man win, you know, so I'll be keeping my eyes open on that one. That's great. And then after that, we have the Patworth Buggy Blitz, which is their first big event on the Saturday that I'll be going to. I think on the Sunday, then I think I'll be back at Coastal for their final one of their winter series. I think then we're into regionals.
Yeah, regional territory there.
Early April. So, guys, it's been wonderful doing another podcast with you, Alexander. It's been great to hopefully entertain our listeners again. Do like and share the podcast about. Apple kind of does that automatically anyway, but do it anyway. I would like to thank mine and Abe's sponsors. That would be Schumacher Racing, Dash, New Concept, Trish Bits, God RC, FF Racing, and Tudor Heart Racing. Who would you like to thank, Alexander?
I would like to thank my fantastic employers, CML Distribution, for all the help they give me with racing bits and pieces, and to Dal Whitehouse of Model Car Racer for helping me out with some of the bits as well. So thank you to those guys.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you to all of our sponsors. And thank you for listening, guys. And it won't be so long next time, I promise. I absolutely promise. We might even try and do one like Buses Come Along at Once and do something a bit earlier to surprise you all. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch up with you very soon. Enjoy your racing. See ya.
See ya.